Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. It is Monday, November 20th, 2017. Later on, we're going to talk to ESPN Seth Wickersham about he and Don Van Natta's stories on the ownership crisis in the NFL and the Roger Goodell, Jerry Jones brouhaha that I guess is brewing, to overuse that phrase. But first, to talk about the game of the week, which ended up being about a really interesting half and then a blowout after the second quarter ended. It's going to be the Athletic, Shel Kapadia. Mr. Kapadia, how are you?
Good, Bill. I might have to just sit on the line when you interview Seth and Don, because I know that's going to be a must-listen and fascinating podcasting. But I'm doing well. Back from Dallas.
Back from Dallas, and the Eagles are back from Dallas with a blowout win over their divisional rivals, 37-9. Of course, they trailed 9-7 at halftime, but then 30 unanswered points in the second half, a dominating performance from the Eagles in a season where they have been known for dominating performances. So let me start with this. Do you think this was their best performance of the season, given the context?
That is a tough one. I think I still look back at that Thursday night game against the Panthers, who mm-hmm. have had some good wins since then, and they went to Carolina on a short week, and I still think that was probably their best game of the season. That was the game where I really started to take them seriously. But like you mentioned, I mean, the Cowboys had everything to play for in this game, sort of their season on the line. I know they were banged up, but to go in there and have some, I shouldn't say adversity, but, you know, some ups and downs offensively, especially mm-hmm. in the first half, and then to just come out after halftime and outscore them 30-0, like you said, just another impressive win in what has been a string of impressive wins for this team.
Yeah, and it, even in the first half, it did seem like they were honestly outplaying the Cowboys, who I thought had a very solid defensive performance especially, but the talent really showed during the second half of the game, and they really gave Dak Prescott a lot of trouble in the second half. So what do you think changed? Did they do anything that you know, sort of inspired the defense to maybe step up, or was it really more of an offensive improvement over the second half of the game Sunday night?
Yeah, I think it was more offensively, and it wasn't any huge adjustment. You know, I was just looking back at what they did in the first half. It was really one of their shakiest stretches mm-hmm. offensively all season. I think they had six straight possessions where they didn't score. I think they had four straight three and outs, but mm-hmm. just going back and looking at it, like, it wasn't one thing or one scheme thing that they had to change or anything like that. You know, there was one drive where Carson Wentz made a bad decision on a run pass option, another one where he got hit and Nelson Aguilar had a chance to come down with the ball but couldn't make what would have been a pretty difficult catch. Mm-hmm. You know, Wentz missed a throw on another one. Torrey Smith had a drop, so it was just kind of like one thing after another, but mm-hmm. nothing schematically. And I think when they came out in the second half, they really felt like they could run against the Cowboys, as they should have. You know, I think the Cowboys were something like 26th in DVOA against the run. They were playing without Sean Lee, and I think that really was the difference in the second half. I mean, they were just gashing them on the ground with their stable of running backs, play after play, very explosive plays from Jay Ajayi, LeGarrette Blount, Corey Clement got in the mix. And you know, the run game has been, it's been pretty good, but it's been a little bit inconsistent where they've had stretches where they can't run the ball well. But mm-hmm. this was a game where it was much more the run game than Carson Wentz or anything else that made the difference, I thought.
Yeah, 10 carries for 35 yards in the first half. Of all people, Kenyon Barner, 4-yard touchdown run near the goal line for just to infuriate some fantasy football owners in the first half. But worked out okay in the long run. Second half, they had 23 carries for 180 yards, of course, the biggest run being that huge Jay Ajayi run with the open hole. And do you think that the Ajayi acquisition, of course, we're only a few games in after they traded the fourth-round pick for him to get him from the Dolphins, but could it have gone any better than it's gone so far for the Eagles?
No, I mean, he's had the 40-plus yard run in both of his games. I really thought he was going to get the ball a lot more in this game. I thought we'd really see him get bumped up and be the primary back, but it seems like it's not lip service when they say they want to use a lot of these guys. But it's just interesting to me that this is a team that, you know, was 8-1, and now all of a sudden for your last seven games on the offensive side of the ball, you've got Jay Ajayi, who is the, you know, immediately the most talented running back on your roster. And then on the defensive side of the ball, you're adding a cornerback in Ronald Darby, who has not played in week one. He's immediately the most talented cornerback on your roster as well. So it's a pretty unusual situation where things went so well for them the first nine games. And now when teams usually start losing guys, you're trying to make up for injuries. And they've had to do that as well. But it's just unusual that you get these two guys who are huge difference makers against the Cowboys and figure to be huge difference makers really for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I want to get to both of them. In terms of the running game, I'll just finish up with this. It did seem like they ran a lot of trap plays against the Cowboys last night. And I was wondering, you watch the Eagles as close as anybody. Is that a common thing in their offense, or was this sort of a thing where you think they really focused on that more versus the Cowboys?
Well, it's been fun for me in my first year back on the Eagles beat to look at the run game. And I think it's one of the most diverse run games in the NFL. I mean, they're running inside zone, outside zone, trap, you mentioned, wham. We see those split zone plays where the tight end comes across and blocks. They run power from, you know, time to time. So they really have a lot of, I guess you could say, tools in the toolbox where depending on what the defense is showing them or depending on what the game plan is, they can call on a different run, which you don't see a lot of teams do. I mean, you know, when I was last year, it was Chip Kelly, and it was, we're going to run, you know, probably three or four runs and do them at a high pace and do them out of different looks. And that's a philosophy that a lot of coaches have, but that's not what this coaching staff has right now. So they have run a lot of traps this season. The wrinkle in this game was the pulling tackle. You know, you can call it tackle power or tackle pull. I think Doug Peterson even called it tackle trap, where Lane Johnson was pulling quite a bit in this game. You know, I think he did on that 71-yard Ajayi run. I think they called that maybe five or six times and really had a lot of success with it. So one thing that's really impressed me about the coaching staff is just the game planning and preparation. And I thought this was another example where they're coming off a bye week against an opponent that really knows what they like to do. And they added kind of one more wrinkle here and then really paid dividends. They run for 215 yards, and that was the story in the game.
Yeah, for sure. On the defensive side of the ball, you mentioned Ronald Darby, who had been out since week one with, look, at the moment, when it first happened, looked like a season-ending injury, but fortunately ended up only costing him half the year. Russell Douglas, the third-round pick, had played pretty well, I thought, in a, you know, as an injury replacement for the injuries they had in the secondary, but you look at Ronald Darby coming back, and they didn't slowly work him back into the lineup. I mean, he played every single snap last night. Russell Douglas didn't play a single defensive snap. So 63 of 63 for Darby, 0 of 63 for Douglas. Did that surprise you? And do you think that's going to be, you know, as long as Darby can stay healthy, do you think he's going to be an every down cornerback the rest of the way?
It did surprise me a little bit just because I wasn't sure what kind of shape he was in and if he would need a breather. And I do think if he needed a breather, you know, it was kind of up to him where he could point over to the coaching staff and they would have put in either Rasul Douglas or even Jalen Watkins had been rotating in there as well. But man, that return couldn't have gone any better. He had the pass breakup against Dez Bryant in the end zone early on. He had the deflection that led to a Rodney McLeod interception. He had another interception of his own. So Darby played really well. And, you know, I wasn't sure because the defense had really, you know, it had been a stable of guys, but I really was giving Jim Schwartz a lot of credit that they were able to play pretty well. I really felt like they had overachieved to this point in the season, and I was just wondering, Darby coming back, obviously a talented player, but a new body and communication and all that, how does it work? And it just really worked better than probably they could have imagined when you look at it. So to answer your question, I do think he's going to be an every down player. I think it'll be Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills will be their outside corners. Patrick Robinson will be the nickel. He has had just an amazing season that I did not see coming at all. He's played at a really high level. And then they do sprinkle in some dime here and there. So whether that means adding a third safety in Corey Graham, or I think there could be weeks where it could be Rasul Douglas or it could be Jalen Watkins getting in there, it's fascinating because it was an area of the team, cornerback, that I thought was probably the biggest question mark going into the season. And now they've got all these guys healthy and playing well. And don't forget about Sidney Jones, the second round pick, he could potentially come back at some point as well.
See, you beat me to the punch. I was going to segue and ask you,
But they were on the same page. We still got it.
I was going to ask you if you thought the cornerback position, given how weak it looked before the Darby trade, but even after the Darby trade and after the Darby injury in week one, given how weak that looked, is that that the most surprising element of this Eagles team so far in 2017?
Yes, absolutely. I think it is. I think they were eighth in against the pass in DVOA going into this week. That should only increase, and they've just they've been good at a lot of things. They've been very good in terms of tackling, whether it's against the run or limiting yards after the catch. You know, they had a stretch in there where they took the mentality of let's play off coverage and give up stuff underneath, but let's not give up explosive plays, which were a problem the first few games of the season. They're generating a lot of takeaways. I think they've got 20 now, which is third or fourth in the NFL. So yeah, it's you know, it's a credit to a few different things. I think number one, the front office absolutely deserves credit for that Ronald Darby trade. I think he's going to be good for them. And then you have to look at just coaching and player development. You know, Jalen Mills struggled a lot last year, and he's really improved as the season has gone on. Even earlier this season, he had some very rough stretches, but he absolutely has played better. And Patrick Robinson is a guy, you know, anybody could have had him. There were talks that he wasn't even going to make the roster this summer, and he had a very bad training camp by all accounts, and then all of a sudden he comes in and he's just shutting down slot receivers week in and week out. I think if you look at their third down defense and put together a reel of who's made the most plays on third down and forced the opponent to punt, I think Robinson would probably be number one on that list, maybe him or safety Malcolm Jenkins. So, yes, absolutely a surprise for sure.
Yeah, someone I'm very skeptical of after his time in New Orleans was very inconsistent, but he's improved, and he's been inconsistent in years past, perhaps even after leaving the Saints, but definitely his best season, I think, as a pro has been this one in Philadelphia. In terms of the one sort of strange thing about last night's game, it was the injury to Jake Elliott, who basically hit the return man on the opening kickoff. Stayed in the game. He missed a field goal from 34 yards, which has been obviously something he has not done really very frequently this season at all. And then he left the game under the concussion protocol and did not return with a concussion. And the Eagles were, as you might expect, pretty aggressive after the fact. They went for it on fourth down, I believe. They went for it once, and they also went for several two-point tries and converted three out of the four two-point tries they had in this game. So, do you think that changes the way Doug Peterson thinks about things, perhaps, even when he has a functional kicker? I mean, do you think he would maybe be a little more aggressive, thinking, okay, well, we tried this and it worked in a game where we didn't necessarily know we were going to have to go for two or go for fourth downs? I know he's gone for a little bit, especially with Wentz on sneaks here or there, but does it change things at all, or do you think it's going to be a thing where they just say, okay, well, we had to do this, but we don't want to be that team?
I think he's very intrigued by the idea of going for two more. I think just from talking to him earlier this season, I pretty much know he said that he's looked at the Eagles, you know, believe in analytics. Jeffrey Lurie came out and said before the season that we're going to be aggressive on fourth downs. That's an organizational philosophy. That's not necessarily a Doug Peterson philosophy. But, you know, just today at his press conference, he was rattling off the math about how often they would have to convert the two-pointers to make it worth it. So I am a little bit intrigued by that, to see if this changes his mindset a little bit going forward, and or not his mindset, but maybe just those decisions. Maybe he just decides to go for two more often than not. And one thing in their favor is they've been so good in the red zone this year. And like you mentioned, on the 2 points last night, they had some very creative play calls as well. So, yeah, I think it is something we could see them do more of for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the rest of their schedule, obviously they are in great shape to come away with the NFC East. They have a 99.7% chance of winning the NFC East per the ESPN Football Power Index at 9-1. I guess the Cowboys would still be in second place. They have 5-5, so they're 4.5 games back with 6 games to go. You figure the Eagles are in great shape, barring what would be a absolutely historic collapse of winning the NFC East. And they're also in pretty solid shape to finish with the top seed in the NFC as well. They have, according to the ESPN Football Power Index, which I'm trying to find right now, yes, they have a 62% chance of coming away with the number one seed and home field advantage of the playoffs in the NFC. So in terms of this team, I mean, do you think Doug Peterson is the sort of coach where if they do clinch the top seed in week 15, say, would they, you know, keep guys out in week 16 and week 17 at home against the Raiders and Cowboys? Do you think they are a team that you would expect to play their starters into week 17 and play meaningful roles? Or do you think there'll be any issues in terms of keeping this team motivated, given that they're in such great shape with six games to go in this season?
Man, I will say when I returned to take this Eagles job, these were not questions I thought I would be answering in week 11, Bill. I have to be honest with you. But, you know, my sense is that it'll just depend on the situation. You know, I think it'll be one of those things where if there are certain veterans who could use the rest, he'll rest them. I do think he likes having the routine, and they've been so dialed in the one game at a time cliche, but it's worked out pretty well for them. But, you know, it is fascinating because they've got the Vikings and the Saints just, you know, one game back in that race for the number one seed. So they're right behind them, where if you slip up 1 week, it's going to be a real race. And I think it could come down maybe to those final couple of weeks. They still have to go to Seattle. They still have to play at the Rams. So that's going to be a tough stretch for them after they play the Bears this week. So, you know, my sense is that it could come down to the last week or at least the last 2 weeks. And I think it definitely is important for them, and that they do want to get that top seed and home field advantage.
Now, I will say, in terms of you being surprised about the Eagles, this is now, if I'm not mistaken, your fourth, fifth year covering a team that won 10 games? And is that an accurate statement?
Wow, you've done your research. Did you start a Wikipedia page on me or something? No, that is true. Yeah, the Eagles had two 10-win seasons under Chip Kelly when I was last here. Then when I was out in Seattle, they won double digits. Yeah, I think it was 10 games. Both the years I was out there, and now it looks like the Eagles are going to be a double-digit win team. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe Jeffrey Lurie or Doug Peterson, I don't know, maybe they owe me a favor or something for returning and helping out their fortunes.
That's exactly what I'm going to say. I know you're committed to the Athletic. I know you're doing great work there, but if the Browns came to you and said, hey, just cover our team for a year, what's the worst that could happen? We're not doing that well. I think you have to at least consider it, right?
That's right. Yeah, you know, you have to see where the powers can extend to. You know, you definitely would need to find that out at some point.
Well, Mr. Capadia, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much. Where can people check out more of what you're doing these days?
TheAthletic.com/Philly. We've got all the Eagles and Philadelphia sports coverage, and then if you just go to TheAthletic.com, you can see if there are other cities or the national coverage that you like. There are a lot of promotions to check it out, free trials, discounts, that kind of thing.
Highly recommended. Shel, thank you so much. We'll have you back on, I'm sure, as we get closer to the playoffs and the Eagles are figuring in the playoff picture. But thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
All right. Thanks so much to Shel Kapadia of The Athletic. We're going to come back with Seth Wickersham of ESPN after the break. More Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. All right, welcome back here to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Now joining me is someone who has been on a live version of the show before. I don't know if he's been on the recorded studio version of the show, but someone who, along with Don Van Natta, has reported a series of pieces on the inner workings of NFL ownership and the now tumultuous reign of Roger Goodell for ESPN, and that's ESPN's Seth Wickersham. Mr. Wickersham, how are you?
I'm great. You know, it's probably better that I'm not going live because, you know, you don't have to, like, worry about me sticking my foot in my mouth and causing all kinds of problems. We can edit out everything. You know, it's probably better this way.
I mean, the Woodlands, Texas is still on fire after you burned the house down with some very controversial comments. No, it was fine. but obviously you've written some really great pieces with Don over the past few months, and it's really been interesting to me as someone who does not obviously know about necessarily what's happening on the ownership side of things in the NFL. So let me start with this. In terms of, you know, you've been writing these pieces now for a little while. What surprised you the most about what you've learned reporting these stories versus what you would have suspected before you started really working on them?
Well, you know, Don and I started working together on a story from Spygate to Deflategate in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, there was all those relocations from teams. And so we worked on those stories. And so coming into the fall, in a weird way, we had like kind of cultivated a beat, you know, full of like all this palace intrigue. And it just sort of hit perfectly for this fall when so many of these amazing dramatic stories are happening outside of the field. Mm-hmm. And so in a weird way, it's like our kind of our beat met opportunity. And it's been interesting. I mean, I got to be honest with you. Like, I have to step back and think about it in terms of like what surprised me the most. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the one we worked on a couple weeks ago and we had Bob McNair in a meeting saying that you can't have the inmates running the prison. I mean, that was a right. pretty surprising one. But, you know, obviously the quote from Jerry Jones on the conference call with Roger Goodell and Jeff Pasch is getting all the attention. But I think that the thing that really surprises me about this is the unknown mm-hmm. and just how far is Jerry going to take this? Will it continue if Roger gets an extension? Those are the questions I think are the most interesting.
Yeah, so let's go there. In terms of course, the most recent piece you wrote was about the battle between Roger Goodell and Jerry Jones, who, if you haven't read the piece yet, definitely check that out. But essentially, I'm going to estimate it very quickly here. You know, he's tried to stall the attempts to hand Goodell a new contract. He's tried to serve as a ombudsman for the rest of the owners on the league's compensation committee, which is an interesting way of positioning himself, I suppose. So let me ask you, does this all spring out of the decision to suspend Ezekiel Elliott, or is there more from Jerry Jones at play here in terms of his motivations?
Yeah, and that answer is a long and complicated answer. But I think that it all started earlier. But Zeke turned out to be the turning point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Jerry has felt frustration for a while that, you know, there's a pattern with Roger, and it's that, you know, through some of these are self-inflicted or some of them aren't, but since he's been commissioner, the league has been kind of surfing from crisis to crisis to crisis. With the head injury crisis, you know, looming over all of it, and his response in all of these situations is usually to hire more expensive people and expand the power of the league office. And I think mm-hmm. Jerry has felt that this not only isn't working, it isn't solving problems, but it's taking power away from the owners, and they view it as their league. And I think that that dull anger has been simmering for a while. And then I think that when, you know, even in May, Jerry was very upset that the owners discussed they unanimously voted to extend Roger Goodell's contract, mm-hmm. giving Roger a huge amount of leverage, by the way. But Jerry was really upset that they didn't spend 1 minute discussing his performance, and they mm-hmm. weren't asking the questions like, are problems being solved? Has he been a great commissioner? Football's in a very odd moment right now. You know, is he the guy to lead us forward? And Jerry was very upset that these questions weren't being asked. And then when Ezekiel Elliott was suspended, mm-hmm. which in Jerry's opinion was Roger going back on his word mm-hmm. earlier this spring saying that Zeke wouldn't be suspended because the evidence wasn't there, that's when I think it became all-out war.
Do you think that if Ezekiel Elliott had not been suspended, you know, do you think that Jerry Jones would be as concerned that they had not discussed Goodell's performance after the fact?
Nope.
Fair.
I just don't, you know, and I think that his concerns are salient, and I don't think they would have been diminished. But, you know, Jerry has been one of Roger's biggest champions through mm-hmm. all these crises, and now is the place where it turned. Any other conclusion just doesn't make sense.
It does seem like it seems like the simplest possible explanation, that he sees this as at least a personal slight, in addition to being a professional one. I mean, is there a perception, you think, around ownership and perhaps around the league as a whole, that Goodell's requests as part of a new contract are outlandish? I mean, he's asking for, according to reports, and who knows how, you know, it seems like this is reasonably accurate, $49 million per year in terms of compensation, and then usage of a private jet and healthcare for his family, both for life, in a, you know, what, 13 or however many billions of dollars we're talking about in terms of NFL revenue. Is that outlandish for a person in Goodell's position? Is that unreasonable? Do you think that ownership or that the owners around the league would be blanching at that if there were not these sort of concerns that Jerry Jones are facing or has been suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, those reports were basically accurate, and You know, I don't have a good answer for that. I mean, it's a lot of money. I think that if you look at the NFL as a media company, the compensation is roughly in line with what a lot of media executives make, but I don't know if it's quite analogous. And I think that, you know, I don't know where exactly he's going to net out. I mean, there's a lot of reports about this, but I think we have to remember that this is a negotiation, and the idea of owners who will take it to the players any which way that they possibly can in any negotiation could turn around and accuse Goodell of being too greedy, I think, is a little humorous, one way to put it. But I think the bigger thing is that what's the overall direction of the league? What's the vision? You know, Roger has hired a huge cabinet that makes a lot of money, and, you know, I think the owners feel like that they are not solving problems and are often causing more. And that's, I think, it's all of those things that are the bigger issues. Because right now, I mean, football's in a weird spot. It's not used to having to hear about declining ratings. It's not used to having to hear about angry sponsors. It's not used to being in the crosshairs of the President of the United States. And that's not even getting into, you know, youth participation being down and, you know, bigger health issues surrounding the game. So again, I think their question is, like, is Roger and the people that he's assembled, do we feel like he's the right person to lead us through this?
Do you feel, mentioning that cabinet that Goodell has assembled, do you think there's an appetite among ownership to have any of that cabinet sort of sticking around, even if Goodell does leave? I mean, obviously the most, you know, the most notable person perhaps in that cabinet would be Lisa Friel, who is a former prosecutor who has been, you know, part of the evaluation process when it's come to suspending players like Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, is there, you know, do you think that was perhaps something that owners felt like they had to do in light of the Ray situation, and then in hindsight something that they wish they perhaps hadn't done?
Well, I think that I suspect that if Roger is renewed, there will be different people, you know, in his cabinet. I don't know who. I think that it's a little, I don't think that everyone's going to be replaced. But, you know, the Lisa Friel hiring is like a really interesting example because, again, it was in response to crisis. And, you know, Roger has always had this vision of the NFL serving as this larger cultural institution that other leagues just kind of don't care about, right? I mean, nobody has ever, like, you know, said that baseball needs to represent America and needs to sort of, like, you know, have this place in our culture that exists beyond entertainment. And I think that you have Jerry and other people who are like, no, 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 no. Our job is to entertain, period. Like, there's nothing else. Like, people come to us for a break. And, you know, that the league thought that it was a good idea to open this ancillary law enforcement wing without any of the tools besides budget that you would have as a prosecutor, you know, has turned out to be a problematic decision.
Yeah, it certainly seems so. And you mentioned that, you know, in the piece in terms of not being able to possibly get evidence that would, you know, really get to the heart of the Ezekiel Elliott case. Is it weird to remember that, you know, once upon a time, not that long ago, I mean, Goodell was lauded for this stuff in terms of being hard on the league's players. And this was a guy who was on the cover of Time magazine as the enforcer in 2012. I mean, a guy, I remember in 2007, you know, he was suspending Adam Jones, and it was mostly praise for that suspension. It wasn't like he was getting a lot of flack from even, you know, whether it was within the league or in the media about, you know, the choices he was making. So was it just, you know, sort of the Ray Rice year that things turned? Or, you know, do you think that he would not have been able to sustain that for a long period of time?
That's a great, great question. And I don't have a clear answer on it other than, you know, he's somebody who often seems to be itching for a fight.
Yes.
And, you know, there are risks and rewards with that. And I think that right now, you know, the hardest thing about this for him, I think, is that I'm not sure that he's wrong. I'm not sure he was wrong on Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, the four panel of experts all unanimously supported him getting some, you know, a form of punishment. I'm not sure that he was wrong with Tom Brady and Deflategate. I mean, where are those two ball boys? Those guys are in witness protection somewhere with duct tape over their mouths. And yet, every one of these things ends up blowing up in his face, often because of self-inflicted issues. And, you know, problems with the investigation, and the union uses them to weaken him at every turn. And these things become these, like, drawn-out legal battles, and it doesn't help anybody. And, you know, I think that one of Roger's greatest sources of leverage is that there is no successor waiting. There is no Roger Goodell waiting, like he was to Paul Tagliabue. And you know how when, you know, like the Giants are like an example of this, but you know, or, and the Eagles are too to an extent, but you know when they that when teams fire a really autocratic coach, they often go the opposite direction, right?
Yep.
And with Paul Tagliabue, people thought he was too lax on some of this stuff, and that, you know, he would never, ever let these things spill out into the public. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they hired Roger to kind of answer that. And I think that whoever, whenever Roger walks away, I have no idea when it'll happen, but when he does, I think that they're going to go back to somebody who wants to try to handle these things behind closed doors more.
Mm-hmm. That does make sense. Let me ask you, though, behind those closed doors, how do you think Jerry Jones wields so much power in a room where everyone, by definition, is a billionaire?
Well, you know, owners are all bosses in their own right, and so they often don't like to be told what to do, and so that is what makes it so fascinating. I think that Jerry, first of all, he's incredibly passionate. Mm-hmm. You know, that comes through all the time. I mean, that guy cares about the NFL, and he cares about his team. And he's as or slightly less passionate, or maybe even more, about increasing revenue in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, owners are very, they're not risk takers, really. You know, I mean, the league usually moves slowly unless there's a dollar to be made. And Jerry is somebody who's always understood how to market things best, how to maximize things, and who, you know, I think that he understands that this is an entertainment company more than a lot of people do. And so I think that he wields a lot of power because he has a vision, and there's very few people who necessarily do. And I mean, his power was so on display in, you know, the Rams relocation to Los Angeles and the Raiders to Vegas. I mean, nobody else could have done that. And those relocations would not have happened if Jerry hadn't been on their side. And I think that he creates an air of inevitability, like this is happening. And I'm going to muscle it through. And that's what makes this contract thing with Goodell so interesting, because when does it end?
It does seem like there has to be a point where he just can't strong-arm his way into convincing most of the league's owners into to thinking the same thing he does. I mean, do you think, you know, there's been speculation that he has a certain subset of owners who are going to back him, you know, in these sort of disagreements with the commissioner. Do you believe that in terms of him having, you know, majority of the league's owners on his side of things?
So I think that he has a handful of owners who are mostly aligned with him. I think Dan Snyder is the only one who's truly aligned with him. But I think there's a couple more that are basically with him. And then I think that there's 10 to 12 other owners who are kind of disengaged. They're often the ones who fall asleep and kind of doze off at meetings. And I think they just want Roger to get re-signed, the path of least resistance, and to get this thing out of the headlines. And then I think the rest are people who are dissatisfied with Roger's performance, but don't agree with Jerry, and in fact think that a lot of his issues are because Jerry's had so much power lately, like the attendance issues in L.A. I mean, you know, the optics are really bad. And, you know, I think so to them, they're very reticent to want to switch commissioners, especially one that basically Jerry appoints, because I don't think they think that he should have more power right now.
It does seem like if that's what happens, Jerry Jones is just going to be a surrogate commissioner to some extent. It does seem like he's being pitted against Arthur Blank, who has effectively fired Jones as the ombudsman of the Compensation Committee. Arthur Blank's obviously been an owner now for quite a while. Is there, you know, does he have a similar, if not necessarily a Jones level, but in terms of the other owners, like a more powerful spot than most other owners in the league? Is he more respected, very well liked? I mean, how does he compare to Jones in terms of the sort of ownership hierarchy of the NFL?
Well, nobody's as powerful as Jerry, but Blank is very powerful in this situation because every owner, including Jerry Jones, granted him the authority by a 32-0 vote to extend Roger. I mean, Roger Goodell has enormous leverage right now. You know, they all voted that he should be extended, and there's nobody who's sitting around in the wings waiting to take that job. And so that's the decision that they made.
Mm-hmm. So let me finish with this. Let me ask you the impossible question to answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway because I have to. If you had to put a number on it, what is the percentage chance that Roger Goodell is the commissioner of the NFL in, let's say, 2020?
80%.
80%?
Pulling that out. But I think if he gets extended, he's going to be around for a while. And I think that after the collective bargaining agreement is renegotiated with the players in, you know, 2021, mm-hmm. I think that's when he'll be looking to get out. And I think that he'll leave before, if he's extended, and it certainly looks like he will be, I think that he will not serve out the duration of that contract.
Interesting. Is there even a name you could come up with right now who you would say, well, this is the guy who's going to replace Roger Goodell? Do you think it's someone who is likely to be known right now, or is it someone who's just going to be a total out of nowhere, you know, outside the league possibility?
I think it's going to be outside the league, which I think is really interesting. Again, yeah. You know, we went back to that analogy with, you know, how teams go from the hard guy to the player's coach. You know, mm-hmm. The biggest strength of weakness for Roger in the eyes of a lot of owners is that he has only worked in the NFL league office. So he understands how this works. And I mean, even the people who don't like him tell me how brilliant he is at navigating all 32 owners.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that there's nobody in the league office that owners are looking at saying, like, that's an option right there. And given the NFL's problems, given that it's so far behind the NBA in terms of global popularity, it would not surprise me at all if they tried to bring in someone from the outside who might be able to help the game evolve into its next step.
Interesting. Well, Seth, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people check out more of your work?
Same place as yours, man. ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Seth.
Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening today. Thanks to my guest, Shail Kapadia of The Athletic, who you can check out on Twitter at Shail Kapadia, and ESPN's Seth Wickersham. You can check him out on Twitter, conveniently enough, at Seth Wickersham. Two guests who know the power of having Twitter handles with their exact name, as is the case for me at Bill Barnwell on Twitter. But just so you guys know, no other shows this week. We're not doing a nickel package on Wednesday, nor am I doing a Bill Barnwell show at the end of the week because of the holiday. So I guess you could listen to this show three or four times in a row. But if you want to simulate the experience, I would subscribe to the Bill Barnwell show on iTunes. Leave us a positive, hopefully, but you know, whatever you feel, a review of some nature. But thanks so much for checking out the show, and more coming next week.